if you're a fan of Hamilton, you are going to love Mexodus. This groundbreaking musical combines history with hip-hop to explore the untold stories of enslaved people on the Underground Railroad to Mexico. Brian Quijada and Nigel D. Robinson give tour-de-force performances while using live looping to create a musical in real time. Mexodus is now playing at Mosaic Theater on 8th Street Northeast through June 15th. Get tickets at mosaictheater.org. That's mosaictheater.org. Today on CityCast DC, protests and encampments regarding Israel and Palestine have taken off across the country. But here in DC, are we doing anything differently? Both Lauren Lumpkin and Peter Herman from The Washington Post have covered the protests and lawsuits at the high school and college level, and they explain what's going on for both. Today's Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Bridget Todd, and here's what DC is talking about. Lauren, Peter, thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Peter, I want to start with you. I understand that pro-Palestinian students from universities all across the DMV have started an encampment at George Washington University. What is going on here, and how have these demonstrations played out?
They've played out a little bit less frenetic than some of the others that we're seeing across the country. There's about 200 right now encamped at GW, with a small section on the actual private campus and another section on H Street, which is a public street. They're certainly mimicking some of the same ideas that we're seeing at other college campuses around.
Do you have any sense of who organized it? Like, is it just students protesting or faculty and students?
It started with just students and some of the groups, some of the pro-Palestinian groups. The university has argued that it has now grown to include some what they call, describes professional organizers or professional protesters or outside groups that are agitating a little bit more than some students. So it's a little hard to tell at the moment, the full makeup.
So what exactly is happening in these encampments? Like, is there programming? Is it just demonstrations? Do you have any sense of what it actually looks like to be there?
They're giving little speeches. They are doing some programming and songs and protest songs and trying to get the word out and, you know, not happy with the way the administrations are handling this.
And how has the administration been handling it? Like, what's been the response?
So George Washington University is a private university. They have their own police force with their own police powers. They asked earlier this week for help from DC police to clear the demonstrators from the private campus from where they had the encampment. DC police were ready to go in and help them earlier this week, but then the police chief and people from the mayor's office declined GW's request. So right now the encampment has sticked.
What exactly are the students' demands?
They want some of the same demands as some of the other schools. They would like divestment, the school to divest its holdings or any connections or any ties it has to Israel.
So, Lauren, I want to bring you into this conversation because at the same time that this is happening, the ACLU is also suing Jackson Reed High School, one of the largest public schools in the city, on behalf of their Arab Student Union. What's going on there?
Right. So they filed this lawsuit last week against the city, basically accusing the school of treating the Arab Student Union different from other student groups on campus. So, for example, a lot of this started back a little bit before the holidays when the group was trying to screen a movie, a documentary, kind of taking a look at the Western media's treatment of the Israel-Palestine conflict over the last several decades. But this film has also been accused of being anti-Semitic. And so that's kind of where it started. The students there said that they were really just disappointed with the school and with teachers. And just this, obviously the conflict was going on, but there wasn't really much attention or education about it happening at school, according to the students who I interviewed. And so they wanted to do this documentary screening. They weren't allowed to do that. They weren't allowed to host a Palestinian culture night. And in the months since, they have also tried to do other events. Kind of, this is all laid out in the lawsuit, but the students and the ACLU is saying that they've tried to do other events related to spreading awareness and educating their peers about Palestine, and have run into several roadblocks, according to their lawyers.
Do you think that parental pressure is playing any role in what's going on here?
I think parent pressure is definitely playing a role in this. I have heard from several parents with students who are in the Arab Student Union, parents who have students in other student clubs at Jackson Reed, just kind of concerns all over the spectrum. But ultimately, this is kind of decisions made by the school. The principal and leaders at the school have to approve events. And when events don't get approved, or when students say that they are trying to hold certain programming on campus and they're not allowed to, they're often pointing the blame at the principal.
And so did the principal or the school give a specific reason as to why these events weren't able to happen?
Right. So back when they were trying to do the documentary screening, at the time, DCPS basically told me and told the students as well that they didn't have the appropriate permission. They didn't get permission. They didn't get the proper approval to hold that event. In this lawsuit now, the students are saying that's an unnecessary hurdle, basically. There's other groups on campus that are allowed to screen movies, and they don't need to request the same type of permission. And then when they tried to hold the Palestinian Culture Night, the principal told the student groups, they have an advisor, and the principal told the advisor in an email that he supports the idea of celebrating Palestinian culture, but there's other opportunities. Basically, the school has this annual diversity event, and so he suggested kind of using that as an opportunity to do what the students were trying to do. He suggested holding an event during Arab Americans Heritage Month. And so the students did host an event this past last week, but they said that it's like a heavily censored version. So they're still hoping to do something more aligned with what they'd originally planned.
Is there any knowledge of this kind of thing happening to other student groups at JR?
As far as I know, I have not heard any complaints similar to what I've heard from the students in the Arab Student Union.
It does sound like that these students are saying that they have reason to believe that the Arab Student Union is being treated differently from other student groups. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. That's what all these students are saying. That's what their lawyer has said as well.
So what are these students asking for in this case?
In this case, they're asking the court to basically instruct the school to allow them to hold their Palestinian Culture Night, hold the event the way that they planned it without any censorship, an event that will be different a little bit from the event that they were allowed to host on campus last week.
And I guess I'm curious, like, where do you see this going? What's next for this whole conversation?
Basically, in the lawsuit, the students are asking the court to direct the school to let them engage in these activities and hold the events that they've been trying to do over the last several months before the end of the school year. In the lawsuit, they give the date June 7th. And so I guess we have a little over a month to see what exactly happens, whether the students will be allowed to do some of these events and do the activities that they said they haven't been allowed to do. But I am definitely really interested to see, you know, where this goes next, especially since the school year is ending so quickly.
Let's be real. Lawsuits are not fun. But with Paulson & Nace, at least they're a little easier. Paulson & Nace is a DC law firm in every sense of the word. It was founded here in 1979. The two partners, Chris and Matt Nace, were both born here and are local leaders who care deeply about the DC community. Paulson & Nace handles medical malpractice, wrongful death, and other complex injury cases when someone has been hurt by the negligence of others. And they don't just settle every case. They'll go to court. They'll fight for you. Paulson & Nace has even been recognized as one of U.S. News' best law firms. So, if you have been hurt or have lost a loved one because of someone else's mistake or negligence, call Paulson & Nace for a no-obligation consultation. Visit www.paulsonandnace.com or call 202-463-1999.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Peter, I'm curious to sort of bring you into this conversation.
I guess what I want to know is, why do you think we're seeing all of this happening on campuses, both colleges and high schools? Like, what do you think makes students and education centers the proxy for what we're seeing internationally with regard to Palestine?
It's a tough question. I think this particular question, the Israel-Palestinian question, is a one that is fraught politically. It is something that's playing out on very graphic terms on the news. It is one that is always at the forefront, I think, of people's minds, especially when they think of international issues. And it's certainly when you see the images that are playing across the screen, I think that's an easy thing to grasp onto in terms of, you know, what is going on, what is happening. And I think college campuses, which are supposed to have debate and challenge ideas, is you know, historically the place for these type of debates to take place in these ways. I mean, going all the way back to, you know, the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and Lauren, I'm wondering if you've seen the similar thing play out at the high school level, that these are just issues that teachers and students and all of us might have a hard time talking about generally because they can be complex. And so I wonder, is that part of why we're seeing these protests and these kinds of things happening at the high school level?
I think at the high school level, what I've heard from students is school is a place where you go to learn about really difficult things and where you go to learn how to engage in conflict with other people, where you learn how to disagree with other people. And, you know, of course, where you learn about historical events and why things are the way they are in the world and what came before. And what I've heard from students is just a lot of frustration that since October 7th, they haven't really gotten that at school. This is according to what the students have said. I know that teachers at Jackson Reed, and I know that with across DC public schools, there's been a lot of conversations about, okay, how do we handle this conflict? How do we handle teaching about the war and all the events that has led up to this moment? But I remember kind of when I first started paying attention to the story, that the students, particularly in the Arab Student Union, were just kind of frustrated with what they saw was a lack of attention. They would have these conversations at home with their families or with their friends, then go to school. And it was almost as if the teachers weren't willing to talk about it or willing to teach about it. And so for these students, they saw their position on campus as a student union to try to do some education on their own. So I think kind of like there's similar issues with what you see on college campuses. But the biggest thing is that you go to school and you want to learn about things and you want to learn how to engage thoughtfully with other people. And if you feel like that's not happening, then maybe students feel like they need to take that into their own hands.
I taught at Howard for a while, and I remember how hard it was when there would be something big happening in the world. And, you know, you can pretend that students aren't bringing that into the classroom with them. Like, as a teacher, I was bringing it into the classroom with me. And, you know, like, I really feel for the situation that a lot of these teachers and students are in, where you might feel this pressure to not bring certain things into the classroom or onto the campus. But these are things that are already in the classroom and on the campus by nature of the climate that we're in. I really feel for these teachers trying to like navigate this. Have teachers at either campus said anything about trying to teach through this or talk to the students about it?
Right. And I do know for sure that there are a lot of conversations at the district level, at the school level, about how do we teach to this moment and do it in a way that's thoughtful and takes all sides and all beliefs and opinions about the matter into consideration. And so it's hard for me to say what exactly that looks like in the classroom right now. But I do know that there are a lot of very hardworking people trying to figure it out as we're going. And I think the disconnect maybe is students aren't feeling that. Students are going to school and they're not really feeling that effort is being made.
Peter, how does DC's response compared to the response from other schools across the country?
Muted compared to other schools across the country. We're one of the few cities that has not sent in its municipal police force to assist the college campuses in terms of clearing out some of these demonstrations. Now, that said, what's happening at GW is a lot smaller than some of the other campuses. We haven't seen violence like we've seen at some of the other demonstrations, as in Columbia, where they're taking over college buildings. And to DC police, this was a very small demonstration with no violent acts, relatively confined. And they're content at the moment just to leave it alone and didn't want the images that we're seeing across the country played out here. They're thinking heavily about the Park Police clearing Lafayette Square during the George Floyd protests in front of the White House and how bad that looked on television screens. And certainly didn't want to see the DC police insignia on GW campus doing the same thing.
Yeah, part of me wondered, watching some of the scenes coming out of campuses across the country, if DC, we just have a different relationship to protest because this is like where people come to protest and we have a history of that. If that the city is just used to this in a way that maybe some of these other places across the country maybe are not.
It certainly is, but then New York certainly is. They're not lacking protests as well, and they went in to help NYU. I think it's a slightly different dynamic here, but yes, the department certainly is well-versed in dealing with protests. Now, I know that I say that, and then tons of people are going to disagree with that, but I think there's a calculus here, right? Bayard doesn't want to upset the university, but also doesn't want to see this type of images that you're seeing from across the country. Now, there might be a point when they do go in or do have to go in or do want to assist. But I think for right now, DC is like, it's on the college campus. They have their own police force. They wanted to win. They certainly can do it.
Do you think it's any reflection to DC's kind of like politics at all?
I think it's more in line of, it's always politics. I mean, right now, the Republicans have sent a letter to Mayor Bowser demanding that she free up her police to help GW to clear the campus. And if not, she's going to do it with, say, congressional action. So there's always politics involved. Keep in mind, when they made this decision, there was only 36 people in the camp. Now it's grown to about 200. It includes not only the private part of the university, but also the public street.
Lauren, Peter, thanks so much for covering this, and thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time. This was fun.
That's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with even more news from around the city. Talk to you then.